You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
This is Nightline.
Tonight, on Defense, the dramatic moments in court for the man who killed Ahmaud Arbery.
What were you thinking at that moment?
I was thinking of my son.
Claiming he feared for his life, will a surprising turn on the witness stand work?
Anything to try to justify the unjustifiable killing of Ahmaud Arbery, who was lynched for jogging while black.
And the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who's been in the court with the Arbery family.
He never was a threat to anybody. He should not have been killed.
Plus, seaweed solution. How underwater farms could help save the planet.
You don't have to add anything. You just put it in the ocean, and that's it. It will grow.
How these marine jungles can be a game changer in combating climate change and feeding the planet.
You can have a bite if you like.
Mmm.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. For the first time since his arrest, we heard from Travis McMichael, the man who shot Ahmaud Arbery, taking the stand in his own defense, telling the jury he thought his life was in danger.
Just raise your right hand. Sir, tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, sir.
We're 9 days into the trial of the men accused of killing 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery. A case that's gripped the nation, which some are calling a modern-day lynching.
Travis.
Yes, sir.
Do you want to testify?
I do.
Why?
I want to give my side of the story.
In a dramatic move today, Travis McMichael, the man who shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery, taking the stand in his own defense, describing the moments leading up to the shooting.
He grabs the shotgun, and I believe I was struck.
What were you thinking at that moment?
I was thinking of my son. It sounds weird, but that was the first thing that hit me.
What did you do?
I shot.
Why?
It was obvious that he was attacking me, that if he would have got the shotgun from me, then it was this is a life or death situation. And I'm going to have to stop him from doing this, so I shot.
Travis McMichael, along with his father, Gregory McMichael, and neighbor, William Bryan, are standing trial together, charged with 9 counts each, including murder and aggravated assault. It was Travis McMichael filmed on this cell phone video, shooting and killing Arbery after what McMichael, his father, and Bryan claim was a citizen's arrest under then Georgia law.
Shut it down!
Arbery's death shook the nation, his name becoming a rallying cry for racial justice.
He never was a threat to anybody, and he should not have been killed.
All you had to do is stay in your house or get on the cell phone and call 911 and let the police do their job. But you and the lynch mob went and chased this unarmed young black man and tried to create a life or death situation so you can justify killing him. It is offensive, and it's an insult on our intelligence.
But on this day in court, the younger McMichael, insisting that he's not guilty of racism or murder, giving his version of events on that fateful day.
I'm trying to de-escalate, but I'm trying to find out what's going on.
Blaming the victim, claiming he followed Arbery in his truck because he suspected him of committing robberies in the neighborhood.
I noticed that he looks very angry, his clenched teeth. As I come up to him, I start to ask him, hey, you know, what's going on? What's going on? He turns and runs.
Did you want to stop him and hold him so the police could come and arrest him?
That was my plan.
When you listen to the direct examination of Travis McMichael, you tend to hear a bit of a stereotype of the scary black figure. It's a strenuous leap to think that Travis McMichael was so fearful of this man who's running down the streets with nothing in his pockets.
Of course he's going to blame the victim. Of course he's going to blame Ahmaud Arbery, because Ahmaud Arbery is not here to defend himself. So he has the benefit of being able to paint the picture to present a narrative however he sees fit.
When the shooting occurred, McMichael claims Arbery had charged him, and he was, quote, on me in a flash.
He was like spring loaded, like, you know, like a running back, like he's ready to bolt or to move any way he wanted, you know, but it was focused on me.
So the strategy, especially in a self-defense case, is you have to put in the mindset of your client. The defense attorney did a phenomenal job in prepping Travis McMichael because he knew all the right answers and all the right avenues to explore during the direct. The real question is going to come when it comes to time for cross-examination.
Special Prosecutor Linda Nadakoski, who built the state's case against the three defendants, argued on cross-examination that McMichael should have known and done better with all the law enforcement training that he says he went through when he was in the Coast Guard.
So you learned as part of your time in the military that you can't force people to speak with you.
That's correct.
And you were taught that deadly force is only to be used as a last resort, correct?
That's correct.
Part of it's going to be, what did Ahmaud Arbery perceive? He didn't perceive law enforcement stopping him. He didn't perceive a lawful citizen's arrest. He, a man who grew up in South Georgia, saw at least two trucks and three white men with guns chasing after him. It doesn't take someone from that area of the country to think, what could Ahmaud Arbery be thinking as he's running for his life?
What did you make of the defensive strategy to show, my words, the many faces of Travis McMichael?
You can't have it both ways. You know, either he's going to be a trained professional who should have been able to de-escalate a situation, or he's going to be this layperson who never should have embarked in this chase and pursuit in the first place.
The prosecution also pointed out that despite the defense's allegations of crimes in the neighborhood, there were actually very few reports of verified incidents.
But isn't it true that Satilla Shores only had one burglary call in all of 2019 and it was a false alarm?
I heard that there were several burglaries from my mother and then from hearing from the other neighbors and then seeing a burglary on the Facebook page.
Throughout her case, Nadakoski repeatedly reminded the jury there was no evidence Arbery ever stole anything, and that the jogger who unarmed on the day he was killed was targeted by three men and their assumptions.
Justice for Ahmaud.
On most days of the trial, pastors have been present at the courthouse, providing the Arbery family with emotional and spiritual support, in holding prayer vigils outside for supporters. But last week, following Reverend Al Sharpton's presence in the court, defense attorney Kevin Goff used the pastor's appearance to motion for a mistrial.
We don't want any more black pastors coming in here. If a bunch of folks came in here dressed like Colonel Sanders with white masks sitting in the back, I mean, that would be a problem.
Then 2 days ago, when civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson was with the family during court proceedings, Goff objected once more.
How many pastors does the Arbery family have? With all due respect, Your Honor, the seats in the public gallery of a courtroom are not like courtside seats at a Lakers game.
And once again today, Goff pointed out the Reverend's presence in the courtroom.
The Honorable Reverend Jesse Jackson is here yet again in the back of the courtroom. I am again moving for a mistrial in this case.
The Reverend Jackson spoke to Nightline this evening.
I have the constitutional right to be in the court, and the moral obligation to be there with a family in distress. And I stand with that story.
Attorney Benjamin Crump also standing strong with the family.
You said you'd bring 100 pastors to the courthouse tomorrow. What message are you hoping to send?
The message is quite simple. The black church and the faith in our community has always been our foundation. And furthermore, instead of being concerned about black pastors coming to pray with the family of Ahmaud Arbery, they should be concerned about the white men that lynched Ahmaud Arbery.
On Monday, Judge Timothy Walmsley called Goff's remarks reprehensible and ruled against a mistrial. Goff has apologized to, quote, anyone who may have been inadvertently offended.
What was his mom's reaction to Goff's comment about the black pastors and then his attempt at an apology?
Ahmaud's parents believe the apology rang hollow because he made these racist comments.
There's a lot at stake here. I mean, our very ideal of justice is being put on the stand right now. And what exactly does justice look like for people of color, for people like me?
So yet again in America, the sins and suspicions of our nation fall to a few shoulders in a small courtroom. Whatever the outcome, there will be lessons learned and lessons lost.
Up next, the surprising secret weapon in the fight against climate change.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Seaweed. It's not for everyone, but this underwater delicacy could be a weapon in fighting climate change. Here's ABC's Maggie Ruling.
Beneath these icy waters, an underwater rainforest rises from the deep. A jungle of seaweed. Just off the coast of the Faroe Islands, sandwiched between Iceland and Norway, these underwater trees could be a surprising weapon in fighting climate change. It's a rare sunny day here when we head out to sea with Ocean Rainforest, pioneers in seaweed farming. The landscape is picture perfect, but the team's quick to warn us, don't get used to the sunshine.
Take a look at this. The gap between those two mountains heads directly to the North Pole. In the wintertime, wind just comes ripping through here. There are massive waves. Water temp is normally only a little above freezing. This is a difficult place to farm.
Oliver Gregersen grew up on these treacherous seas. He tells us he launched his company here with one mission, to help combat climate change.
We don't have much land area, but we have an enormous ocean area. We could grow a forest in the ocean by growing seaweed in the ocean, taking up CO2, and then using that seaweed to either replace fossil-based products or use the seaweed for food and feed products.
Known as blue carbon, coastal and marine ecosystems like these seaweed farms are known as a carbon sink, absorbing dangerous greenhouse gases from the air.
We only have 3 or 5% of the planet that is tropical rainforest, and it's decreasing. While you have 70% of the planet, that's ocean.
Yard for yard, this marine forest captures more carbon than a tropical rainforest. And as places like the Amazon are burned and raised for commercial use, underwater is the new frontier.
A little kelp crab, some snails, we even have a little baby lobster.
Where scientists can grow entirely new ecosystems.
Oh my God, look at that!
They're really adorable.
Everything that we're looking at here used to be an empty water column. And once you put a seaweed farm in, it really is a forest that creates higher biodiversity than you would have found here before.
While seaweed's been cultivated in Asia for centuries, marine farming is brand new in the West, attracting a whole new generation of scientists and innovators who are ready to revolutionize the industry.
You don't have to add anything. You just put it in the ocean, and that's it. It will grow.
Iris Menger was getting her master's in aquaculture when she realized seaweed was the future.
It's actually really exciting because you throw in a white naked line And then you go and see after a few months, and then you don't see anything of the white line anymore. It just grows.
Yes, let's go.
Each line hangs 40 feet down into the ocean, but from above, all you can see are small buoys. Beneath the waves, this massive farm produces as much product, yard for yard, as a potato farm would.
There's a strong interest among millennials for products that are sustainable and healthy. And this resource is both.
Unlike traditional farms, seaweed farms don't compete with other resources on land. They don't need fresh water to grow, and they don't require pesticides, fertilizers, or antibiotics.
What's wild is to think that right now we're standing in the middle of a farm.
Yep. The good thing about this kind of farming is the less we do, the better we do. And we are harvesting it by cutting a piece of it, but leaving a piece so it can regrow.
Witnessing a seaweed harvest is unlike anything I've ever seen, as the team pulled in lines of a four-story long seaweed from the water. Today's harvest quickly piles up, each bag filled with 1 ton of seaweed. Then it's all brought to this processing plant. Here, Floor Marsman's in charge, and like everyone else we've met, she's very passionate about kelp.
It's actually a long time ago that I first heard about the concept of seaweed farming that was in the Netherlands, and I was, oh my god, that is really cool, you can farm seaweed.
She takes us inside this custom-designed factory to show us the process. First, the seaweed's cleaned and dried before it's fed through a grinder.
It grinds the seaweed in basically a soup of very small pieces.
You can see the seaweed goo.
Nothing goes to waste. That goo is stored and will eventually be fermented and put into animal feed. Back on the boat, Oliver explains that by turning it into feed, seaweed's climate healing powers are taken one step further.
The methane that they burn, like cattle, we can reduce that up to 80% by this type of seaweed.
Wow, and, 80%?
And just by adding between 3 and 5% to the feed.
Methane is one of the most dangerous greenhouse gases, and livestock accounts for roughly 32% of its emissions. While more research still needs to be done, seaweed's impact on the environment could extend far beyond these murky waters.
We can have our dairy products with a good conscience because it will come from a climate-neutral cow.
Demand for this underwater lettuce is booming. Seaweed cultivation globally has become the fastest-growing sector of food production.
Then I think that we can see seaweed product coming in and replacing other products that today are harmful for the environment.
For the World Wildlife Fund, the potential for seaweed to reshape the world's environment is so promising that for the first time in its 60-year history, it's investing in a for-profit company with Ocean Rainforest.
Is there any concern that there could be negative side effects to seaweed farms?
We worry about making sure that we're not filling up entire bays with it. And fortunately, because seaweed farming has been around for a long time, it's really well studied, it's understood, and so regulators can make appropriate decisions.
Paul Dobbins oversees these investments for WWF and says the biggest issue is overcoming regulatory hurdles. Since seaweed farming is still so new in the West, in some nations, it's easier to get approval for marine oil exploration than it is to plant seaweed.
Is it actually possible to have seaweed farming make a real impact, a real dent in climate change?
It's not the silver bullet. It's going to take a number of approaches to resolve the significant issues we have with the climate.
It goes beyond just being a business. If we then can do something good for the rest of the world as well, then it's fantastic.
Our thanks to Maggie. And finally tonight, more than six decades after her death, groundbreaking feminist artist Frida Kahlo is making history. Her self-portrait, Diego and I, selling at auction for a record $34.9 million, the most for any work by a Latin artist. It depicts Frida with an image of her husband, Diego Rivera, on her tear-stained face during a turbulent time in their relationship. Rivera held the previous record until now. And that's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot. The ladies go deeper into the moments that make The View, The View.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.